How do you get real positive impact that even leads to more innovation? Mary, why don't you talk to us a little bit about the impact you all have seen for the WOW visits?
Okay, this is connected to that project. So what I'd like to talk about is our work building a vibrant local network in Tanzania to expand our impact and creating a global training course in the process. Stepping back to the example in Tanzania, we're now shifting forward from 2009 to 2011. In 2011, the project in Tanzania was well on its way. We were achieving all of our targets, but we had a pesky ongoing problem. We weren't spending enough money. We were reaching all our targets, but our burn rate was lower than anticipated, partially because we were relying on lower cost technologies, and the donor was clamoring for us to spend. Simultaneously, the innovative new approach to water services that I described earlier that we were piloting called MUF was beginning to take off globally. And WinRock was receiving all sorts of requests about how to do MUF. So we were grappling with how to meet these demands. We really had two good problems on our hands: how to utilize the extra funding that we had to responsibly expand our impact, and how to share what we were learning with a much larger audience. So this is what we did. We decided to develop a training course to bring in seven NGO partners that we had been working with in our project, but they had been sort of coming into our project area. We decided to bring them together, provide them with training, and offer them the potential for seed funding to implement MUS in their own project areas. It was a very daunting task, actually. We brought in our global MUS team from all over the world, WinRock's team. We sat together, we designed the course, and then we tested it. And there's this picture you're seeing is from the testing that we did with our local partners. You can't see in the window in the back, but there were a couple vervet monkeys that were very interested in what MUS was all about. And we gave the training program, which allowed us to test and vet the program to use elsewhere. And we also got our partners to understand more about what MUS was about, and then we offered them seed funding. We did some hand-holding with them in their proposal development and also went with them in the field. And to date, we've given out approximately $1 million in small grants to these seven different organizations. Something actually amazing has happened as a result of it. We were working in Morogoro, Tanzania, and suddenly all of our work is replicating and scaling nationally. We have partners now up in Arusha, Mwanza in the northwest, in the south we're with Njombe, Ifakara, and into the west we're into Iringa. And this network, what's been so fantastic about it, besides expanding our impact, the sharing that has gone on, for example, we've learned from one of our partners in Ifakara, they have a very unique sort of hybrid private sector community-based approach for water service delivery that's helped our thinking. And in fact, we've even taken those ideas now and introduced them in our projects in West Africa. And so this very dynamic, innovative group that keeps learning and working together has been very unforeseen and has been a fantastic result of the creation of this vibrant new network. And in the process, we've also gotten this great training program that we've been able to roll out and share to help others learn about MUS and how to implement it.
It's a great story, Mary, and certainly a great picture. And for those of you who have enough clarity on your screen, you do get to see a little bit of those monkeys who are watching the training. So it was obviously incredibly compelling. And I think what's interesting for me is that the statement that you had donors clamoring to spend money, which is a great problem that I think everyone on the call would love to have. But maybe more importantly is how you use that money, that you spend it utilizing the network to share and scale what you were already doing. And that's the whole opportunity arose because really, utilizing a network was actually less expensive than doing it yourself, building that organization, which we actually heard Eric talk a little bit about as well. So shifting a little bit, let's go to Mark and hear about how you guys are actually creating real impact on the ground.
Okay, I think another example of a network or a problem that we faced and how we were able to address it through networks is that in Kenya, the government of Kenya was one of the first in Africa to open its data or to follow the example of the U.S. and the World Bank and making its data open to the general public. And we had a long and well-established network of journalists that we had been working with there, and so we took advantage of that opportunity to work with them on how to report on that data, how to pull it out and really kind of, you know, make these huge data sets relevant to the general population. And what we quickly learned was that they did not have a lot of experience, as with journalists all over the world, often don't have much experience with managing these huge data sets. We had already hooked into the network of Kenyan hackers that that Eric had established through the iHub, and that through that we were able to really connect a lot of coders and other technologists with a group of journalists to put together apps and other applications that made it easier for the journalists to pull that data out, to understand it better, identify trends that were of importance, and then start to really build some interesting stories, making that information relevant to the general population. Where we really saw this, this was a really great example of just how things can take off, because we kind of started to develop a certain approach and methodology for this, but then Eric and some of his people developed another approach, and so now you have a whole series of different projects that are moving forward through these networks addressing this really key issue of how do you make these large data sets relevant in this government data. I think another thing which was really important here was that we used these examples when connecting with universities that were particularly the information school and UC Berkeley, that were very interested in issues of data literacy, because we also felt these were very important, because in a lot of situations where you have illiterate populations, how are you going to, you know, make these data sets really relevant? So that through, again, expanding even further into another network, into the academic field, we're able to now start to put together a program in which we're looking and identifying new methodologies, whether it be information graphics or others, to really make these vast amounts of data which are being released through open data initiatives or big data sets and make that really accessible and relevant to the poorest of the poor. And so this has been really exciting because it just seems to keep on expanding.
I think it's really interesting to hear you talk through that, because a couple things that I pull out is, one, you really understood how you were engaging the network and who that network consisted of. So it was a very discrete group of technologists and journalists that you were targeting, not sort of everyone out there or everyone involved in the problem. And you really understood how you were connecting them to issues like data literacy. So I think, once again, sometimes when we think about networks or even broader communities, it starts to feel like everyone in the world could get engaged, and possibly they could be. But it's always being really targeted and understanding what you're offering them and how you're really going to get that impact. So I think that's really helpful. Eric, why don't you jump off of what Mark was talking about, since you guys have worked together quite a bit. There'll probably be a lot of natural segue there.
When we think about engaged networks and how they help us as an organization become more innovative, it's sometimes a little bit easier for us because of where we're from. The history of Ushahidi was coming out of Kenya's post-election violence in 2008. And then we built this open source platform. That open source platform made us have to engage with other people outside of ourselves in the very beginning. We just simply could not build what we needed to build on our own. We needed others' help, which in turn led to our organization being more open. And since, you know, the four of us were bloggers as well, it made it easier for us to reach out. We kind of had a knack for doing that in this open way. We still blog almost everything, so that it's a very open communication. What that allows us to do is when big things happen somewhere, to quickly connect. And the example I kind of have here is another major event happened last year, the tsunami and earthquake in Japan. And here, the lesson that we learned was that the technology, of course, itself isn't the main thing. It's, like we often say, it's 10% of the problem. The other 90% is the management, it's the team, it's the administration, it's the messaging, all these other things that many organizations already do and do quite well. But that technology, what it allows you to do is overcome great inefficiencies in the system. And it allows small teams, individuals, to have great impact far beyond what you would normally expect. And in this case, Japan was a perfect case point because it started off with just a couple guys in a room who were OpenStreetMap guys, and they set up a map using Ushahidi and said, okay, send your information here. And it quickly grew to other people in the organizations around them that knew them, and then it grew beyond that and started just snowballing into thousands upon thousands of people taking part. Eventually, it was so big that the government also was playing a part in this. And we've seen this over and over again, from New Zealand to Pakistan as well. And I think that's really what I'm most interested in here, is that we see these small organizations, these or individuals themselves, taking simple technology and being able to leverage that into a much greater change. And when we see that kind of thing as an organization, as Ushahidi, we say, okay, this innovation that's been done out here, how can we take this back into our organization and learn from it? So when we saw Japan, the story for us wasn't that it was a massive deployment. It wasn't that it was a great use of our technology. It was actually more that we had, you know, a small group of people able to do a great amount of things. So what other tools could we create that allowed individuals to overcome the barriers usually put in front of them and to help them change the way the information flows in the world? So we don't just have this kind of structured top-down information from the normal players, but also bottom-up information from ordinary people.
It's so interesting to hear that in some ways what you're talking about is the opportunity for networks to address that very traditional answer to solving problems, which is build a really big, large, scaled organization. And instead, you're talking about being flexible, being nimble, being small, just as I think Mary and Mark have, going out and leveraging what already exists and like-minded peers to solve those really big problems. And the pace at which you can grow is vastly faster and more efficient than what the traditional methods have seen. And I think you guys have some really good case studies on the ground impact to show that.